Welcome to Reality Student Ministries, and thanks for listening. We are all about learning how to live this life to the fullest, getting the most out of every day. For information on upcoming events, sermon series, and ways to connect, be sure to check us out online at reality.painesvilleag.com, as well as like our Facebook page at RSM. Now here's today's message.
We are in week 4 of this Transformed series, and man, I'm excited about what God is doing through this series, not just in youth group here, but man, just in the church, because not only is it preached on Sunday mornings in Big People Church, but also in Kids Blast and on Wednesday nights here, and it's one of these things that, man, we're all speaking a common language, we're all on this thing, and I tell you what, there is something powerful that happens when we all get on the same page and we start talking the same language and we start going after God together. And this whole idea of God wanting to mold us from the inside out, that he wants to do something in and through us. And here's one of the biggest things about this whole Transform series is following God is not just allowing God to be a part of your life. Following God is not just about allowing him to be a part of your life, but rather surrendering every aspect of yourself to him. Every aspect of your life to him. That's what this whole idea is. That's what this whole transformation series is. Now, I'll tell you what. Being a Christian is a simple. It's a simple concept. Follow God. Simple. But it's not easy. You'd think that we've been going through this. This is now week 4. That we would understand. Yeah, this is simple, Donnie. You're like talking basic stuff. But when we get down to the nuts and bolts of it, it's not easy. I mean, if I'm honest with you, it's not always easy. We talked about the first week of these of being spiritually healthy, of creating habits that get us into a relationship closer to God, and this whole understanding that God wants us to perform at peak performance, and so how we do that is, you know, hanging out with him and attending church and being generous and investing in Christian friendships, and all of a sudden that's like a duh. Like, people talk to me, it's like, duh, and yet it's so difficult sometimes to do. It's simple to understand, but it's difficult to do. We talked the next week about physical health and that beauty is in the eye of the beholder, right? And so the question is, you know, who are you allowing to behold you? Is it the world standards or is it God? And often we put our value in what the world says, and that's not the way it's supposed to be. And then last week we talked about mental health and this whole idea of transforming our mind and this whole idea of what God's doing in and through us and how our challenge was last week. I don't know if any of you actually did it, but our challenge was every day to be intentional about seeing God in the details, seeing God instead of just, it's so easy to see the negative stuff, it's so easy to see everything else going on, but to see God doing stuff around at least once a day, if not 3 times a day, what is God doing around me? Because we talked about this. What we think dictates what we do. What we think dictates what we do. And the reality is we find what we're looking for, right? We talked about the hummingbird and the vulture, right? Hummingbird, right? Like sugar high, like ADD kid on like, tripping on crazy stuff, tons of sugar, right? That's what a hummingbird is, a million miles an hour. And so a hummingbird every day finds like sweet nectar to feed on every day. And a vulture, remember we, not the vulture from Jungle Book, but like, how you doing? All right, but it's the vulture every day finds something dead to feed upon. And so the reality is, you find what you're looking for. So are you like a hummingbird and finding the good things? Are you finding what God is doing? Or are you like a vulture and just seeing the dead things that are around you? I'm not good enough. I'm never going to be there. I'm just, woe is me, and on and on it goes. Because every day you find what you're looking for. And you're saying, oh man, that sounds awesome. If you've missed any of our series, this is a little plug for getting online. If you've missed any of our series, you're like, I really wish I could hear that again or whatnot, go to reality.painesvilleag.com, and then you can, under our resource tab, there's audio section, and you can actually find, we have our sermons up there, and not just the Transform series, but even back into 2014 and some of those, as well as we just hooked this up this week. We're now on iTunes. We're a podcast on iTunes, and so if you type in Reality Student Ministry, you'll be able to find us. We're the one with the little R, you know our logo, the little blue R, and you can find that and listen online that way. This is another opportunity that I realize, guess what? You can't get all of your friends to church sometimes, but this is an opportunity to take the church to them, you know? And so I thought this was really funny. I was riding with a guy one time, and he was like, hey, you want to just talk more meaningless conversation, or you want to actually, you know, do something with your life and you know, add some value to it in the next 30 minutes? I can't really say I want to just talk meaningless conversation now. And he's like, awesome. So, yeah, I want to listen to this leadership podcast. Oh, okay. And so, I mean, you could trap your friends in the car. Hey, you want to go for a ride? Sure. Listen to this. It's like, this is the worst ride ever. Right? No. But it is an opportunity for you guys to connect it with your friends, or if you miss a week or whatnot. So, anyways, moving on. Our theme verse is Romans 12, verse 2. It says, do not be conformed to the patterns of this world, but be what? Transformed by the renewing of your mind. Be transformed by the renewing of your mind. So this week we're talking about emotional health. And a lot of us hear about emotions, and we kind of just like shut off, because we see emotions as like a negative thing. Like, no one ever goes up to you and is like, oh my gosh, you're so emotional. So emotional. And like, I don't go home to Lauren and be like, honey, oh my gosh, they said the sweetest thing to me. They were telling me how emotional I am. And like, I'm always emotional. It's like, no one sees that as a compliment. They're like, you're emotional. Like, you're weird. Like, get yourself together, man. Right? We see emotions as like a bad thing. We try to shove them down, we try to fight against them, and we see, oh no, emotions are bad. And so we view emotions as bad things that we have to like conquer. We have to conquer these emotions. I don't want anyone to see that I'm sad or mad or depressed or lonely or happy, right? I want people only to see the happy side of me. Everything else, if I'm angry, I'm just gonna shove it down, right? But here's the thing. Emotions are real, but emotions are not the enemy. Emotions are not the enemy. But so often we view them as the enemy, right? I'm so sick and tired of being depressed. I'm so sick and tired of being lonely. I'm so sick and tired of being frustrated with my parents or my siblings. I'm so sick and tired. I'm so... And we're like, oh, we shouldn't feel this way. Oh, I shouldn't feel this way. And what do? A lot of times what a lot of people do is they see that, oh, you know, you're feeling this way, so we'll give you medication and we'll try to regulate these emotions and all this stuff. And all of a sudden we're trying to go after that because we feel like emotions are a bad thing. Now, to the parents that are listening online and to you guys that are hearing me, don't hear what I'm not saying, right? Chemical imbalances, that sort of stuff, that happens. That's real. I understand that. Medication for that, I understand that, right? Medication is not a bad thing. I'm not anti-medication. So some of you guys are going to go home and be like, Mom, he said I don't have to take these stupid pills anymore. It's like, no, that's not what I said. That's not what I said, all right? That's not what I'm saying. I'm not anti-medication, but this is what I am. I'm anti-human control. When we start relying on medication and we start to look to that as our source of emotional control, as we look to that as the thing that calms us down, brings us back to whatever, and that's the only thing, when we start to rely on that and that alone, then all of a sudden, that's when I'm starting to be against it, because I'm against anti-human control, and I'm for God control. Yeah, medication, that stuff is great, that's good, but often we put our trust and our hope in the medication and that other stuff instead of in God. We put our hope and trust in the counselor that's going to fix us, right? We put our hope and trust in whatever, our friend that we have to talk to about it. And that's good, but when we put all of our hope and trust in that thing, then that becomes the problem. Because God needs to be our source. God needs to be our hope. I'm not anti-medication. I'm not anti-going to counselors. I've been to a counselor. I've gone through that stuff. I understand that. I'm not against that at all. I'm just saying, don't let that be your end-all, be-all. That's what sustains me. No, God is the one that sustains you. Because here's the reality. Emotions are a God-given way of relating to the world and circumstances around you. Emotions are a God-given way of relating to the world and circumstances around you. God gave you emotions. God didn't put you on this earth and say, you better smile the entire time. If you're not smiling, you are not of me. I don't love you anymore, right? That's not who our God is, but we feel like that. We feel like, as Christians, we have to always, God bless you. Jesus loves you. With everything, oh yeah. Ah. Right? That's not it at all, right? We're called to have emotions. Even the wisest king, Solomon, wrote this book, Ecclesiastes, in chapter 3, he said, there's a time for everything, a time to be happy, a time to be sad, a time to grieve, a time to dance. You go through that whole thing, there's a time for everything. Emotions happen. But here's the truth. God gave us emotions not to rule us, but to fuel us. God gave us emotions not to rule us, but to fuel us. And so the question is, are you allowing your emotions to rule you or fuel you? You're like, well, how do I know? How do I know if my emotions are ruling me or fueling me? Right? I'm so glad you asked, creepy kid. Man, gotta get security in here. So, how do I know if my emotions are ruling me or fueling me? What does that even mean? So the first question would be, is that emotion the end result? Is that emotion the end result? And here's the thing. The problem is that most of us, most of the world, point to one emotion to strive for, point to one emotion as our view of success, point to one emotion as if you have this emotion, your whole life is put together and you don't have any issues. Anyone have a guess what that one emotion is? Happy. Happy. What do they always talk about? Well, are you happy in your relationship? Well, are you happy with your job? Well, are you happy at school? Or are you happy? And all of a sudden, it's happy, 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 right? Even, remember, I preached this a while ago, but I did that Pharrell Williams song about how, you know, clap along with me if you think happiness is the truth. And he's missing it. That's not true. Happiness isn't the end all, be all. But often, we allow happiness to be the end result. That's what I want. I want to feel happy. And all of a sudden, that emotion dictates everything that we do. I'm not happy with my family. I'm not happy with my friends. I'm not happy with my life. I'm not happy with my car. Something needs to change. And we allow our emotional side to be detected or directed by what we're doing, by what we're feeling. We allow this emotion to rule us. Don't get me wrong, happiness isn't a bad thing, but when it rules us instead of fuels us, then we have an issue. I've said this before, but I'll just reiterate it. Our end result is not to be happy. It's to be holy. And people get aggravated with me when they say this, because they'll come into my office and they'll sit down and just be like, I just want to be happy. I just talked to somebody the other day, earlier this week. I just want to be happy. Yeah, God doesn't care if you're happy. That sounds harsh. I shouldn't say that. But it's this reality of, I don't see anywhere in Scripture where it's like, in this world, you will be happy if you follow me. In fact, I kind of see the opposite, where he's like, in this world, you will have trouble. You will have strife. It's gonna stink for you. It will be hard. Oh. But take heart, because I've overcome the world, so can you. I've got this plan for you. You're going to suffer persecution. People aren't going to understand why you're doing what you're doing. People aren't going to understand why you say the things you say, why you decide to do the things you do. But take heart. They did the same thing to me, and I'm with you. I go before you. God doesn't care about that emotion of happy. He doesn't look up in heaven and be like, Michael, my angel, my homeboy, check this out. Look at that guy. Look how happy he is, man. I'm so glad he's happy. No, no, he goes up there and says, look at what he's doing. Look at what he sacrificed for me. Look at how much he loves me. Look at, he's stepping out into, he's not allowing fear to dictate the call of me on his life, right? The call of God on his life. Man, look at that. He's going all after. He's forsaking everything else. And he's saying, you know what? It doesn't matter. I know that God's called me to do something. And so that's what we are called to do. Number two, and the question is that emotion motivating us or pushing us to strive for God? Is that emotion of happy helping us getting closer to God? Is that emotion of anger getting us closer to God or pushing us away from God? And here's what we know about emotions. They are reactionary. They're reactionary. Emotions react, right? You break up with your girlfriend or boyfriend, you're sad. You win a basketball game, you feel happy. Or you get great seats at the Cavs game, happy. You get grounded, you feel mad. You get caught doing something you shouldn't, you feel guilty. Right? Someone says something mean to you, you feel hurt. I love Jimmy Kimmel. He's a late night talk show host, and he did this thing. It's called Mean Tweets. He has a section of his show that's called Mean Tweets, and man, there's so many of them, and most of them are not appropriate. So I had to cut and choose and kind of select some, but they are hilarious. And what he does is on Twitter, you know, you can write anything. On social media, we're like, yeah, tweet, you're so awesome, or you're ugly, and I hate you, right? You can write whatever you want on Twitter and not really suffer any consequences from other people. Like, no one's gonna, like, punch you in the face, right? Because you wrote that on Twitter. And so he actually found tweets directed towards celebrities, directed towards singers, and he brought those singers in, the famous singers, and he had them read those tweets about themselves. And so if we can show this video, if it works, that would be awesome, and we'll just see some of these mean tweets.
Would you rather listen to Josh Groban or have diarrhea ladled into your ear? Hard choice, am I right?
At Triple M Candy Yams would like to let me know that Drake looks like Voldemort with hair.
Trying to use the word hate less often. Here goes, I thoroughly dislike Sam Smith. Well done.
Hey, look, Ed Sheeran is still ugly.
Wiz Khalifa looks like a homeless woman.
Weather in New York City right now is like a young Britney Spears. Pretty hot, kind of gross.
I'd rather bathe in my own vomit than go see 5 Seconds of Summer on tour.
The antebellum singing the national anthem actually kind of makes me hate America.
Ouch. Pharrell looks like a sewer rat.
John Mayer looks like a booze-soaked turd wrapped in a Dumb and Dumber tux.
So Adam Levine is old.
Thinking of unfriending everyone on Facebook whose status update is Kid Rock concert was awesome. Have a little respect for yourself.
All right, so isn't that just mean? Just mean. But I love John Mayer's. Looks like a turd wrapped in a Dumb and Dumber tux. That's awesome. But that's just mean, right? Sometimes we just react when people say stuff to us that's mean, just mean, right? Emotions are reactive. But I love this. God, he's not reactive. He's proactive. Emotions are reactive, but God is proactive. And so when you're feeling emotional, you need to start asking the question, is this emotion drawing me to my heavenly creator or pushing me away? Is it drawing me to my heavenly creator or is it pushing me away? I've told this story before, but man, I love this. I in college, I had an opportunity to go to Mongolia. Does anyone know where Mongolia is? Okay, a few of you. Anyone know where China is? Okay, a lot more of you. So Mongolia is kind of sandwiched between China and Russia. Like, if this is Russia, this is China, Mongolia is the space in the middle. Like, it's just sandwiched way over there. And we went to in the middle of the Gobi Desert. Gobi Desert is one of the biggest deserts in the world, and we went to the middle of it, like, and it's janky. Like, you go there, and the airline pilot's like, oh, we're landing now, and you're like, where? Where's the asphalt? There's no asphalt. You just land on the sand. Oh, okay. That's great. Super excited about that, right? Or we took a 12-hour van ride to the town that we're at through the desert. I've now been in a snowstorm and dust storm at the same moment. It's ridiculous. And you know when the snow is really bad out there and you're like, I can't see the road. It's just like two little things going. And that's what the whole 12 hours was in the desert. You're just hoping your driver knows where he's driving. All you see is just sand. And you're like, did he just kidnap all of us Americans? Like, I have no idea. And then all of a sudden this little town pops up out of nowhere. You're like, oh, whew, man, that's great. Like, the whole time, you're just praying, dear God. At one of these times, they crammed us all into this van. It was a 7-passenger van that was now holding 14. And there was this old lady that I'm pretty sure was 150. And we had to crank start. If no one knows what this is, that's this. Never seen it. I got to crank start a van, which means you have this little rod that goes into the engine, and you manually go, okay, good, okay, it started, we're not stuck in the desert, right? And this little old lady was sitting, like, on top of me, and she was talking to me in Mongolian, which I had no idea for the 7 hours left that I was like, okay, this is really awkward, right? And so we were in Mongolia, and the missionary that we were working with for 5 weeks, we were there, the missionary we were with was from Brazil. And he played on the National Football League. He played on the Brazilian soccer team. I mean, he was legit. And I was like, why are you in the middle of the Gobi Desert? Why are you here? You're crazy. And he goes, listen, you know, I thought for sure God was calling me to be, you know, on that Brazil team. He goes, you know that they need Jesus there. And he thought, man, what a great platform. I could get the whole team saved. And how awesome would that be? And I'd be so happy there. He goes, but that wasn't God's will for my life. He goes, I'm in the middle of God's will, in the middle of the Gobi Desert. He goes, and that's all that matters to me. He goes, yeah, I would have been happy for a little bit, but man, that would have died off. He goes, I'm in the middle of God's will, in the middle of the Gobi Desert, far away from everything that I know. He had his family and his two kids there, and it struck me that it's like, man, God didn't always call us to be happy, to chase happiness as our end-all, be-all. He called us to be holy, to say, you know what, God, I want to go into the farthest reaches of the world. God, I want to go where your light is seen dim, and that might just be to my family, that might just be to my schools, where your light is dim, and I want to shine your light, which takes work. Jeremiah 17, verse 9 says this, the heart is hopelessly dark and deceitful, a puzzle that no one can figure out. But I, God, search the heart and examine the mind. I get to the heart of the human. I get to the root of things. I treat them as they really are, not as they pretend to be. Here's the thing. God knows our true motives in our heart. God knows what we're thinking. And here's the thing about emotions. They stem from a desire, a deeper desire. And this desire is called passion. This passion is what dictates our emotions. It dictates what we chase after. It dictates, hey, what is our end result that we are going after? And this passion, I love the way that this definition put it. It said this, passion is ambition that is materialized into action. To put as much heart, mind, body, and soul into something as possible. That's what passion is. You know, but here's the thing about passion. Passion without perspective can bring about punishment. Passion will find expression, either healthy ways or unhealthy ways. Passion, when passion outweighs wisdom, then that's when problems arise. So passion can be an awesome thing, but passion can also be what drives us far from God. When we're passionate about only being happy, we can start making drastic decisions. We can start doing some things to our body that we shouldn't be doing. We can start going to places that we really shouldn't be going. We can start hanging out with people that we really shouldn't be because we're passionate about being happy, not about being holy. I want to look at the story of Samson. If you've never heard the story of Samson or haven't read it in a long time, man, that is a fantastic story. You want to talk about a superhero that's like so much cooler than Captain America. Samson tore lions apart with his bare hands. He was just like, right? He was just incredible. You read through Judges, the book of Judges in the Old Testament, it was just legit. Samson was awesome. He was killing people with jawbones and doing all sorts of crazy stuff. Like, I was like, there go Samson, right? That's probably why I named my son Samson, just because he was so awesome and legit, right? But here's the thing about Samson, is he started being passionate about the wrong thing. Samson, from when he was born, he was set aside to be something special, to help bring people back to a relationship with God. They're under captivity, they're under this stuff, and he was called to bring people into out of captivity into a relationship with God. Not much different than what we as Christians are called to do, that say, hey, we want to shine God's light and let people know that there is hope, that there is a different way to live, that we don't have to live just striving after happiness. There's a way to live this life full. And Samson lost sight of that. And so you see this in Judges 16. You see the story of Samson and Delilah. Hey there, Delilah. What's it like in New York City? Right? So you have this story of Samson and Delilah, and you've got this thing going on between them. And he was sleeping with her. Shouldn't be sleeping with her. Right? And all of a sudden, Samson started trading his passion for God for his passion for pleasure, his passion to be happy, his passion to feel happy about wherever he's at and doing whatever he's doing. And so all of a sudden, you see this girl started asking him some questions, because his enemy said, hey, can you find out why is he so strong? And the reason he was so strong was because he was dedicated to God. And they said, hey, God said, don't ever cut his hair and he won't lose his strength. Don't ever cut his hair and he's going to be awesome, right? Okay. So they never did that. And so they're trying to figure out why is he so strong? Because they didn't know that. The enemy didn't know that. And they're like, hey, we'll pay you some money. Can you figure it out? And so this woman starts asking him, hey, how you doing? Hey, if somebody like wanted to like, I don't know, hurt you and subdue you, like capture you, maybe kill you, something like that, what would be like the first step to getting rid of all your strength? And Samson was like, first of all, guys, if a woman ever asked you that, that would kind of just be like a clue. Maybe a red light, not the best relationship. I don't know. So Samson made up this lie. He's like, oh, you know, if you tie me up with this certain rope, and it'll be crazy. I won't be able to move, right? And so he falls asleep, and he wakes up, and he's tied up with that certain kind of rope. Now, if I told Lauren, like if Lauren came up to me and asked me that, and I told her that, like something, and then she did the very thing that could take away all my strength and so people could subdue me and capture me and kill me, I would be worried at that point. What? Huh. Does this mean that she wants... No, it can't be that. And so then she's like, no, Samson, really? I'm, don't lie to me. Naughty boy, right? What's the real reason? And so he's like, okay, it's really this other kind of rope. It's really this other thing. And then it happens again. Is she just testing? She's listening to what I'm saying, so I guess that's the good thing. We're communicating. That's the thing I'm taking away from this, right? And then she's like, no, I'm serious, Samson. This isn't funny. Tell me what goes on. So this goes back and forth, like a couple different times. And finally she's like, if you really loved me, you would tell me what kills you. Or not quite that way, but basically. And Samson's like, fine, man. Like, he's not catching this at all. And so lo and behold, she chops off his hair, cuts it all up, and this is the verse that I want to get to. Verse 20, it says this. So she like surprised him to see, finally, did this work? She goes, then she said, the Philistines are upon you, Samson. And when he woke from his sleep, he thought, I will go out as at the other times and shake myself free. But here's the line I want you to catch. But he did not know that the Lord had left him. he never caught on. Why couldn't he catch on? Because he allowed his passion for happiness and pleasure to cloud his vision, to cloud who his vision of who he was really created to be. He allowed this passion for happiness and pleasure to cloud this vision of who he was really created to be. And often we allow that. We go, man, this just doesn't feel good, or I just want to be happy. And we go after all this happiness, and it all of a sudden clouds our vision of who God created you to be. And you're like, hey, I'm you know, everyone on the soccer team likes me now. Everyone in my class likes me now. It gives me a better platform to preach your name, right, Jesus? And God's saying, you're losing sight of who I created you to be. You're just buying into a substitute. He was supposed to be the rescuer of people, bringing them back to a relationship with God. That's what we're called to be, a rescuer of people, whether it's one or whether it's hundreds. We're called to be a rescuer of people, and yet are we allowing something to cloud our vision? And slowly realize that we didn't know that the Lord had left us, because we've been chasing after, we've been passionate about pleasure and happiness. I want to clarify something real fast. It's about to get PG-13 on you. Here we go. When we sin often, and this was me, and often it's this idea of when we sin, we think we're going to get struck down, it's going to be horrible, it's going to be awful, it's going to be the worst thing we've ever experienced. But guess what? It even says in the Bible, sin is fun. Sin feels good for a time, and then it leads to death. I'll be real frank with you. Guess what? Samson, often we're told this lie that don't have sex before marriage. It's a horrible thing. Sex is horrible before marriage. Sex feels great. Sex is awesome. I'll just be frank with you. I told you it was going to get PG-13. All my middle schoolers are like... But here's the thing. God created sex for marriage. And so we cheapen it when we go outside the boundaries of it. And we have to suffer the repercussions of it later down the road. Samson had to suffer the repercussions of his decision to sleep around later down the road. Jacked him up. Felt really great at the time. But he was making some stupid decisions the whole time he was doing it. Like, yeah, this kills me. Huh. She's really weird. She's kind of feisty. All right? All of a sudden, this is what I want you to catch. Guess what? Sex outside of marriage, sex makes you stupid. Outside of marriage, sex makes you stupid. A bunch of people are going to go home and be like, what'd you learn tonight? Sex makes you stupid. Awesome. Can't wait for those emails. It's going to be great. But this is the thing, is he's substituted his passion for happiness and pleasure for what God's called him to be. And often we do the same thing. So what are we passionate about? Is our passion drawing us closer to Christ or pushing us farther away? Because passion can be a good thing. It's the first step towards achievement. It increases our willpower. Passion changes us. It can make the impossible possible, right? So we look at another character of passion in the Bible. Flip over to Luke and we see John the Baptist. Man, this guy was passionate about God. He was passionate about that. His whole life was dictated by this passion because he believed, his whole life was preparing people for Jesus, preparing people for God. Kind of sounds familiar, like what we're supposed to be doing, right? Preparing people to encounter Christ. His whole life, to what he wore and what he ate. He ate bugs and honey. That's disgusting. I don't care what kind of diet you're on, right? That's just like, meh, no thank you. He wore this weird clothing. He looked like a freak. I mean, you talk about, I mean, he was hipster before hipster was cool. Like, he was just like, dude, that outfit just doesn't work. But whatever, I guess you can pull it off, right? And so he was that kind of guy. And all of a sudden he said, you know what? I don't care about what else, what pleasures of the world. You know, you can keep your delicacies. You can keep your fine linens. You can keep all that. I just want Jesus. I just want Jesus to be known in my life. And I don't want anything to deter me from my mission to follow after God. Because I want to point people to whoever this Christ, this Messiah is that's coming after me. And people saw, man, what a passionate guy. What a passionate guy, to the point where they thought he was the Christ. And he said, no, I'm not that. He said in Luke 3:16, John answered saying this, I indeed baptize you with water, but one mightier than I is coming, whose sandal strap I am not worthy to loose. He will baptize you with the Holy Spirit and fire. Even when people were like, dude, you're so awesome, you're so awesome, you're so cool. He's like, no, it's not even about me, dude. It's about Christ. I'm telling you, sometimes that gets difficult. You start thinking, oh, yeah, man, I'm leading worship great. Or, hey, man, I'm talking to people and it's awesome. But then all of a sudden it's like, no, it's not. It's never been about you. It's always been about Jesus. It's always been about pointing people to the Messiah, pointing people to the God of the universe. And so often we're like, hey, you just need to come to church. Hey, you just need to come to church. Guess what? It's not the church that does anything for them. It's the God of the church that encounters them and changes them and can do something incredible in their life to where they will never be the same. It's not the preacher that changes them. It's the God of the message. Man, it's not my words. It's what is God doing in your hearts and my heart that changes us? So what can we learn about his passion? He was one consumed with his mission. He knew God had called him to what God had called him to do to bring people far from God into a closer relationship with him. He was two, he spent time in solitude. Before his public ministry, he spent so much time in the wilderness, and he spent time with God saying, God, I want more of you. Less of me, more of you. Less of me, more of you. Less of me, more of you. Less, more, less, more, less, more, less, more. Little, 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 right? He said, God, and I love what this writer said about him. It said, John the Baptist, he boiled with the presence of God, and he couldn't keep it shut up in his bones. Man, God, that I would have a passion that boiled, and I wouldn't be able to shut it up in my bones. That would just overflow. Number three, he felt dissatisfied with anything but action. He felt dissatisfied with anything but action. I love, this idea that we often say, I'm just waiting on the move of God. And God's saying, I'm just waiting on you to move. God wants us to move, right? We get so consumed with doing the right thing, checking the right boxes, with these battles, and honestly, it can end up stalling us because we get so consumed with this world stuff that we're dealing with instead of focusing all of our passion towards Christ. God, I just got to get my life together. I just got to get all this stuff right, and then I can follow and do what you've called me to do. And God said, no, it's never been about that. Just follow me. And from the inside out, we'll take care of the rest. Your passion needs to be about me. So how do we get this passion like John to fuel us? How do we allow this passion to fuel us and not to rule us? And the first thing is think it through. Think it through. You know, what has happened or is currently happening that makes us feel this way? What thing in your life, emotion is happening, and why is this happening? And so take your temperature. You know, is this happening because I'm passionate about something I shouldn't be passionate about? Am I passionate about feeling happy when I really shouldn't be passionate about that? I need to be passionate about God, right? So take your temperature. The second thing is talk it over. You know, this is why we encourage you not just to come to church, but to be the church. Man, talk to your friends about what you're going through. You're not meant to do this life alone. Say, listen, hey, I want to pray with you about what's going on in your life. What's happening? Can you tell me? Sometimes people, it's very rare that somebody's going to come up to you and be like, hey, here's everything that's going on in my life. Blah, pray for me, right? Like, that doesn't really happen often. So sometimes you need to be proactive and show up and say, hey, what's going on in your life? Is there anything I can pray about? And give them the opportunity to respond. But that's what, talk it over. Man, allow somebody to speak into your life, into your motives and emotions. Then take it out. Find a positive outlet. Find a positive outlet. Go for a walk, write in a journal, paint a picture, sing in the shower, cry in the shower. You know, find an outlet to where you're able to just release it. Because why? Emotions aren't the enemy. Emotions are something that God gave us to relate to this world. And so often we're like, I can't cry. I can't cry. It's like, I really want to cry though. God's like, okay, just cry then. No, if I cry, then they win, right? And it's like, no, that's not it. God's saying, no, I gave you emotions for a reason, right? And then the other thing is pray it up. God cares about what I'm going through. he feels what I feel, and he wants to help. So return to your first love, right? How passionate are you about your relationship with Christ? I love this. Jesus stated in the garden, he was emotional, sweating, drops of blood. He was emotional to where he was saying, God, I don't want to do this. This isn't going to make me happy. In the garden, right before he was about to get turned over to suffer and get crucified, he said, not my will, though, God, because I don't want to do this. If there's any way that we could do this differently, can we do that? Can I phone a friend? Can I, ask the audience, somebody else to do it? He said, I want to do that. He said, but at the end, God, if not my will, but your will be done. Not my will, but your will be done. Because guess what? Jesus might not have felt like doing what he knew needed to be done, but he knew what he was called here to do. He knew what he was supposed to do. And some of us need to say, you know what, God? I know what you have put me here on this planet to do. I know that you have called me to be light into the darkness, to be able to reach people that are far from you, to draw them into a closer relationship with you, to live life full, to connect people into this growing relationship with you. I know that you've put me here for that. And so I'm not going to let anything distract me or detour me or point my passion away from you. God created you for something. And often our emotions can lead us off of that path. But often they can also fuel us to accomplish everything that God's created us to. When we channel our emotions and our passion towards Christ, all of a sudden, we can become this incredible thing. And the God of the impossible, as we talked about our theme this year, can do something in and through us in an incredible way. So Austin and Emily, if you guys could come on up. And we're going to go back into kind of that bridge of that song, With Everything. And as we sing those lyrics, you can stand up and you can spread out if you want. You can stay seated right where you're at. But I encourage you to say, you know what, God, with every aspect of who I am, with every emotional frustration that I have, God, with everything, I want to worship you. God, I want my passion not to be directed on whether or not I'm doing it right, whether or not I'm doing the right thing, whether or not I'm being the right person. But God, I want my passion to be directed to you, the author and the finisher of my faith. God, because you began it all. God, you're everything to me. So tonight, can we do that? Can we say, God, you're the God of my emotions. So would you take and make me this emotional mess? Often I get so confused and frustrated. I get mad at myself for feeling this way. God, would you take that? Because I know that you have called me to be passionate about you and you alone. Jesus, we love you. Jesus, you're everything to us. God, we adore you.
Thanks again for listening to this message from Reality Student Ministries. Our hope is that you've learned a little bit more of who God is and who he has called you to be. For information on how you can get connected to our student ministry, be sure to check us out online at reality.painesvilleag.com or like our Facebook page at RSM. Now get out there and have an incredible day.